Our second case this morning is United States against Miller. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Captain Melissa Gopher with Koenig, and together with Lieutenant Colonel Mark Tellitocci, I represent the appellant in this case, Private Brandon Miller. Members of the court in this case, where appellant's conviction of resisting apprehension was found to be factually insufficient, the Army Court erred when it affirmed a lesser-included offense of simple disorder under a theory not presented to the trier of fact. This offense was neither pled nor proven. Appellant was charged with the following specification. In that Private Brandon Miller, U.S. Army, did, at or near Weijianbu, Republic of Korea, on or about 11 March 2005, resist being apprehended by PFC Edgar V. Salinas, an armed force policeman, a person authorized to apprehend the accused. The Army Court affirmed the following. Appellant did, at or near Weijianbu, Republic of Korea, on or about 11 March 2005, hit Mr. H and struggle with and run from PFC Edgar V. Salinas, an MP and a person authorized to apprehend the accused when the MPs were assuming custody of appellant, which conduct was of a nature to bring discredit upon the armed services and was to the prejudice of good order and discipline in the armed service in violation of Article 134 UCMJ. An appellant should not be tried and convicted for the first time on appeal. An accused may be found guilty of an offense necessarily included in the offense charged or of an attempt to commit either the offense charged or the offense.
Is this an LIO?
No, Your Honor, it's not.
It's not an LIO. Okay. So you've really got two prongs. One, it's not an LIO. And two, it was the theory was never presented to the trier.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Okay.
Could it be an LIO? I understand there's a difference between necessarily an LIO, but could it be an LIO?
It could have been a lesser included offense had the government had requested that instruction had they proceeded on that theory of trial.
If the offense of which he now stands convicted as a result of the decision of the Court of Criminal Appeals, if that offense had been charged initially, would it have been preempted by Article 95? Under the preemption doctrine in terms of the relationship between Article 134 and the enumerated offenses?
I'm sorry, can you clarify your question?
Yeah, with the offense of which he now stands convicted, would that offense have been preempted had it initially been charged? That is, would the defense have been able to make a motion at trial saying that you can't charge me for this offense under Article 134 because the conduct that is at issue in here is the same conduct that Congress established in Article 95 as an enumerated offense?
Well, Your Honor, he couldn't have been convicted of both offenses because it is the same conduct. While an appellate court does have the authority to set aside a finding of guilty and affirm only a finding of a lesser included offense, that authority is not without limits. An appellate court may not affirm an included offense on a theory not presented to the trier of fact. This issue had actually been taken up by the United States Supreme Court, by federal circuit courts, and by the military courts. And the United States Supreme Court says that to uphold a conviction on a charge that was neither alleged in an indictment nor presented to a jury offends the most basic notions of due process. And they go on to say that although the jury might well have reached the same verdict, had the prosecution built its case on a theory affirmed by the appellate courts, an appellate court is not free to revise the basis on which the defendant is convicted simply because the same result might have been obtained at retrial. The federal courts have a very similar take on this. Federal courts in the First Circuit, has basically said that the theory affirmed on must have been the one that the prosecution built its case on. Military courts, they've also recognized an appellate court may not affirm an included offense on a theory not presented to the trier of fact. To do so offends the most basic notions of due process by violating an accused's right to be heard on the specific charges of which he is accused. Our case, though, is actually even a little bit different. In our case, if you read through the discussion that the military judge was having with the trial counsel and the defense counsel when they were discussing instructions after all the evidence was in, they were discussing, what lesser included offenses apply. Well, for resisting apprehension, you actually do have enumerated lesser included offenses, or assault and assault consummated by battery. On the record, both counsel and the military judge, they wrangle with this for several pages. They determine that assault and assault consummated by battery don't apply in this case. And they think of, you know, whether or not there are any lesser included offenses. And both parties agreed that, in fact, there were no lesser included offenses. And the judge, at the end of all of this, the judge said, okay, then there are no lesser included offenses. It's either straight up or straight down. So he made a ruling that there were no lesser included offenses in this case.
Counsel, isn't this case then much simpler than the way that you started out, which is just whether this could have been charged and proceeded on as an LIO or not? In this case, it wasn't.
It was not presented as an LIO at all, no, Your Honor.
And therefore, they could not affirm an LIO that was not an LIO.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
So I guess what my question is, all the other arguments that you're making, which are much broader, don't need to be decided in this case.
Well, in the event that you don't agree with the simpler argument, yes, I mean, I think we would need to come up with something else.
I'm from the Midwest, so I'm sort of simple.
Okay. But we're taking several approaches here and hoping you see our point on at least one of them.
Do you agree or not agree that Judge Ryan was simple?
Sir, that's a loaded question, and I think I'll refrain from answering.
You could just say, I agree, she's from the Midwest.
But there are actually a couple of cases that are very similar to this case. First of all, there's the McKinley case. In McKinley, the appellant was originally convicted of obstruction of justice. The appellate court affirmed a simple disorder, which was not an enumerated lesser-included offense of obstruction of justice. But in the McKinley court, there was a very similar discussion between both counsel and the military judge regarding lesser-included offenses. And the military judge just basically made a ruling and said, okay, there are no lesser-included offenses. And just like the judge in our case, he said, okay, then they'll either be straight up or straight down. So in McKinley, in the decision, the court ruled that with manual states, there are no lesser-included offenses. The military judge rules there are no lesser-included offenses. And counsel agreed that there are no lesser-included offenses. Such a ruling becomes the law of the case, absent error materially prejudicing the substantial right of the accused. Now, while our case is slightly different, while there are two enumerated lesser-included offenses, they're certainly not the lesser-included offenses that the appellant in our case was convicted of. So, under McKinley, our client should still prevail. There's a similar situation in United States versus Riley. During that case, there was an overwhelming amount of evidence that appellant Riley could be found guilty of involuntary manslaughter through culpable negligence for not rendering medical aid for a child and feeding medical assistance for a child. In spite of there being a tremendous amount of evidence, the military judge did not instruct on that, and the prosecution said they had not proceeded with that theory. On appeal, the service court affirmed on that theory. And this court basically said that they couldn't do that because it was a theory that had not been presented to the trier of fact. Now, as far as the government's brief, the government cites to United States versus Foster and United States versus Fuller in its brief. Under United States versus Foster, there is a small portion and there's a small line in United States versus Foster that says that every enumerated offense necessarily includes the element of conduct prejudicial to good order and discipline and service discrediting. And that's a very small portion of the opinion. There's also a lot more to the Foster decision than that. And actually, you know, the other things that the Foster court had to say helps our case, you know, a lot. And the Foster court said that in order for a court-martial to convict a service member of a lesser general article offense arising out of an enumerated article charge, the government must prove the extra elements beyond a reasonable doubt, as it must any other required element of proof. So certainly, you know, I would say at best, Foster kind of contradicts itself, but it seems very clear that it says that those elements do have to be proven by
you have to prove prong one, good order and discipline, or prong two, service discrediting, as a separate element.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
What about notice? And there, I'd call your attention to the Supreme Court's decision against in Parker against Levy. What bearing does the concept of notice have in this case with respect to the constitutionality of any proceeding under Article 134? That is, does the accused have to have any notice as to what might constitute an offense under Article 134?
Well, in the Supreme Court's decisions in general have said that an accused has to be put on, that basically an offense has to be pled and proven. That seems to be the general holding of the Supreme Court. And we see that in Apprendi and Jones. In all the cases since Apprendi, they're all saying pled and proven.
Is there anything in Parker against Levy or any of the cases that have discussed Article 134 that would create an exception to that concept?
Well, Parker v. Levy says that Article 134, that conduct prejudicial to good order and discipline and service discrediting under Article 134 can be charged as long as it's constrained.
And isn't that an important part of the decision, that is the constraint that's provided by notice, either in the manual, in the custom of the service, or the content of the charges?
Yes, sir.
Is 134 an exception to the proposition that there's no federal common law of crime? Or 133, either one?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I can get back
to you. In other words, the offenses have to be statutorily defined. You know, that's been general federal law for 200 years. That a federal criminal offense has to be statutorily defined. I'm just asking if 134 is an exception to that.
No, sir.
It's not?
I do not believe it's.
Okay. But it's statutorily defined within the statutory words of 134. Is that what you're saying?
It should be, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
As far as Foster, too, I just want to make sure that we distinguish our case from Foster. The court in Foster did make that one comment about that element being necessarily included in the enumerated offenses. Foster was a very different case. Appellant Foster was charged originally with forcible sodomy. During the discussion about what instructions would be included, the military judge decided he was going to instruct on indecent assault, which was enumerated lesser included of forcible sodomy at the time. Appellant was convicted of indecent assault, and then on appeal, the appellate court set aside indecent assault and affirmed indecent acts. So appellant and Foster is arguably put on a lot more notice than the appellant and Miller. So it's certainly very different. Also, too, it's important to keep in mind that the panel in Foster was put on notice. Our panel in Foster did consider the element of conduct prejudicial to good order and discipline and service discrediting during their decision. And they did determine that Appellant Foster was actually, his actions were prejudicial to good order and discipline and service discrediting. And, of course, there was no affirmative waiver statement in the Foster case as we had in Miller. The government has also cited United States versus Upham. We just want you to keep in mind that United States versus Upham, Appellant Upham was convicted of aggravated assault. And the appellate court set aside the conviction for aggravated assault and affirmed assault consummated by battery in that case, which is a named lesser included offense of aggravated assault. So the appellant in Upham was actually put on notice. Now, just to touch again on the Supreme Court's position and this court's position on not pleading and proving the elements. The Supreme Court has said that all elements of an offense should be pled and proven, meaning that appellant should be put on notice at the onset of the indictment about what he's being charged with, which makes sense since, you know, that would give the, you know, defense team an opportunity to prepare and put on their case. The military courts, too, in Medina wrote that where an offense is a lesser included offense of a charged offense, an accused is by definition on notice because it's a subset of the greater offense alleged. However, where a distinct offense is not inherently a lesser included offense, the military judge or the charge sheet must make the accused aware of any alternative theory of guilt. So the military court is kind of going towards what the Supreme Court has been saying all along. Subject to your questions, I have nothing further.
Thank you, counsel. You have an opportunity on rebuttal. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court, my name is Captain Patrick Broderick, and together with Colonel Mark Sydenham, we represent the government in this matter. The Army Court of Criminal Appeals correctly found that, although the appellant's conduct did not rise to the level of an offense under Article 95 for resisting apprehension, appellant's conduct in resisting the apprehension did constitute a civil disorder under Article 134, Clauses 1 and 2. Under this court's jurisprudence in Foster, the concepts of good order and discipline and service discrediting are implicit within the enumerated articles under the UCMJ.
Is a simple disorder, is every enumerated article pregnant with a simple disorder?
Every enumerated article, Your Honor, grew out of the general article concepts of service discrediting or prejudicial.
Well, that's not what I'm asking. I'm saying, is a simple disorder an underlying, unnamed, undefined, unmentioned in the MCM, LIO of every enumerated offense?
It can be, Your Honor.
It can be.
But that can is different than is. Isn't the issue whether it's necessarily so? And Foster says may. How do you deal with the may in Foster?
The may in Foster is that the element...
You know which may I'm talking about, right?
I know it well, Your Honor. Under certain circumstances, the element that is missing in an enumerated article offense may also be fatal to an offense under Clauses 1 or Clauses 2.
But if it may be an LIO, doesn't the CCA require it to be necessarily an LIO to affirm it?
That is correct, Your Honor. And so the CCA has the ability to determine whether the underlying conduct forms a disorder. And that's under Article 134 jurisprudence, which the Supreme Court has found in Barker versus Levy, necessarily has to be flexible.
Where in the record did the government prove the extra element beyond a reasonable doubt?
The elements of discipline or service discrediting?
Right.
That was proven when they proved that the appellant resisted the apprehension of an armed military police officer and did so in such a way in front of Korean police officers.
And this was members, was it, or Judge Lund?
This was a panel.
This is a panel. And so where in the record do they say, and this constitutes discredit?
The record does not...
Is the word discredit used anywhere in the record?
It is not.
Okay. So your argument is that it's done by implication, but not by, in fact, saying this is the element, and this is how the facts that met the element.
That is correct, Your Honor. Under the facts of this case, the panel found that the appellant resisted the apprehension of the military police. Under the established precedent of Foster, when those facts were found, a 134 or Clause 1 or 2 violation can be found as an lesser included offense under the enumerated articles. And this grows out of the precedent, which is that before the enumerated articles were enacted, the general, as the Foster case mentions, many offenses were prosecuted under the general article. And the general article, therefore, is a lesser included offense because once the enumerated offenses were established, the concepts of prejudicial, good order of discipline, and service discrediting were implicit within the elements of the enumerated statutes.
Where in 2009, where in the Supreme Court jurisprudence is your support for that theory with respect to notice?
Your Honor, under the Parker versus Levy case, the Supreme Court recognized the importance of Article 134 in military jurisprudence and recognize that certain conduct in the military system is criminal, conduct that in the civilian system would not be criminal. The Supreme Court has not spoken to whether 134 is allowed included under Article 79 of the enumerated offense.
Well, how are the concepts of you need to give notice to military defendants, how is that concept inconsistent with the altogether different concept that Article 134 has an important place in the military?
It's because when you're charged with an enumerated offense, you're deemed to be on notice of the lesser included offense. And under the jurisprudence of this court...
But the question that we're talking about today is whether something is a lesser included offense.
That's correct, Your Honor. Under the Foster case, clauses 1 and 2 of 134 can be lesser included offenses.
So your answer to my question with respect to, in 2009, what is the Supreme Court support for your position with respect to notices? Parker versus Levy says that it's important that Article 134 be there to support good order and discipline in the military.
In addition, Parker versus Levy also says that the Uniform Code of Military Justice cannot be equated to a civilian criminal code. Therefore, when applying the elements test, when we're dealing with Article 134, a uniquely military concept, the elements test, as the Foster case found, cannot be strictly applied. You cannot match up the elements under an enumerated article and match up with the elements under Article 134. And that's simply because, as Foster found, Article 134 and the military concept, those concepts of good order, discipline, and service discredit are found within the enumerated articles. And therefore, a strict elements test cannot be applied.
Well, are you saying then that you don't have to prove when you fall back on 134, that you don't have to prove service to one prong one or prong two as an element, either GO and D or service discredited? Are you saying that it's just all subsumed?
It is subsumed within the enumerated articles.
Well, no. What I'm saying is, if you end up back in 134 as an LIO, as a catch-all LIO, do you have to prove GO and D or service discrediting as an element of the 134 offense?
Yes, you do, Your Honor.
You do? Okay, thank you.
Counsel, going back to Parker against Levy, could you identify which aspect of that decision's discussion of notice would support the concept that the accused was on notice in this case of the offense of which he was finally convicted? That is, not that he was on, not the question of whether he was on notice that he might be convicted of some offense under Article 134, but where in Parker against Levy is there support for the proposition that the offense of which he was convicted in this case is an offense of which he had notice consistent with Parker against Levy?
Parker versus Levy does not address resisting apprehension under Article 95.
But doesn't it address notice and the importance of notice as an important limiting factor under Article 134?
It does, Your Honor. And as the Foster case, this Court found in Foster, it is implicit in the elements of enumerated offenses that these concepts of prejudicial to good order and discipline and service discredit are contained within the elements of an enumerated offense.
Well, where's your limit? To follow up on the Chief Judge, if notice is a limiting factor and you're saying, well, it's all pregnant with each other, then everything's in there somewhere. You don't have to say anything. You know, it's like the old English case of the guy who jumped off the bridge. There was no statute that prohibited jumping off the bridge, and the judge said, well, even though there's no statute, there must be something that prohibits people from jumping off bridges. Now, where does that leave us?
Your Honor, the Parker versus Levy case relied on the importance of military custom and in giving meaning to the terms service discrediting conduct on becoming of an officer.
Okay, so resisting apprehension that doesn't quite rise to resisting apprehension violates a custom of the service?
It violates...
In the Johann sense?
Well, before the enactment of the UCMJ, before the enactment of Article 95, in the Army and in the Air Force, their history behind Article 95 and the UCMJ indicates that there were cases in which that conduct that you're referring to was prosecuted under the general article. And so...
But at that time... Go ahead and finish your point.
I had finished that point.
Judge Stuckey, did you have a further question?
I
apologize for interrupting. At that time, there would have been no preemption problem. That is, in the absence of a specific article on apprehension and resisting apprehension, there was the possibility of a charge under the general article as it existed under the Articles of War. Once the Articles of War were replaced by the Uniform Code of Military Justice and the preemption doctrine was applied, which is in paragraph 60C of the Manual for Courts Martial, doesn't the preemption doctrine apply to the question of whether there is or is not a lesser included offense?
The preemption doctrine does apply, Your Honor.
Okay, so under the preemption doctrine, which existed and was well established at the time Parker against Levy was decided, how could the offense of which the accused was convicted, the appellant was convicted in this case, survive a preemption challenge under Article 134? Let's say that the charge of which he was convicted was the initial charge in this case. And the defense had said, this looks like resisting apprehension without all the elements. Why isn't it precluded by the preemption doctrine under paragraph 5 of 60C of the Manual for Courts Martial?
The reason, Your Honor, is because the element missing in resisting apprehension would not be fatal to the lesser included offense of service discredited. The example in the manual that you're referring to uses larceny and indicates that if the intent element is not present, then the government is prohibited from prosecuting someone under Article 134. And the reason is because once intent is removed, the person cannot be found to have acted in a service discredited or intentionally acted in a service discredited manner or a manner that would be prejudicial to goodwill or discipline. So you have to look at which element is missing from the enumerated offense to determine whether or not Article 134 can serve as an LIO. In this case, the fact that the appellant remained in custody, in the Korean custody, during his resistance is not fatal to the fact that while he was in that custody, he acted in a manner that was prejudicial to goodwill or discipline and in a manner that was service discredited. So as far as preemption analysis goes, we have to look at what element was missing from the greater offense and whether taking that element away, it is fatal to a lesser included offense under Article 134. In addition to the Foster case, this court rendered a decision in the Fuller case, in which the appellant there was charged with maltreatment under another enumerated article, Article 93. There, the consent element of the victim's consent, rendered the conviction of Article 93 for maltreatment to be unsustainable. So the appellate court did not sustain the greater offense. However, the conduct underlying the offense, which was encouraging another soldier to have sex with the victim in that appellant's presence, that conduct was considered prejudicial to goodwill and discipline. And accordingly, this court upheld the conviction under Article 135. The exact same analysis applies in this case. Here, simply because the appellant remained in custody, and therefore the enumerated article, Article 95, could not be sustained, does not mean that the appellant's conduct did not consist of a violation of Article 134, Clauses 1 and 2. Simply the fact that the appellant remained in the Korean national's custody does not remove the fact that the appellant's conduct was prejudicial to goodwill and discipline. And in that respect, this is not a new theory that has been advanced by the Army Appellate Court on appeal. The exact same facts that convicted the appellant resisting apprehension are the exact same facts that were found to constitute the simple disorder under Article 134.
And was the notice provided by our case in United States versus Foster?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I mean, we've asked you as many different ways as I think we can, what put this appellant on notice of an Article 134 LIO? Because you'd agree it's not in the manual for court martial as an LIO.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And you'd agree that at trial they all said that there was no LIOs.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And you'd agree that the specification as drafted did not include the elements that would make it a Clause 1 or a Clause 2 Article 134 offense, correct?
Well, Your Honor, the specification does not use terms of service discrediting or good or
so the answer to my question is it's not in the specification.
Your Honor, it is in the specification when the specification charges the appellant with an enumerated offense.
And that's because Foster.
Because of Foster and Article 79, which puts an appellant on notice when charged with the greater offense, you're deemed on notice of the lesser included.
But that doesn't answer the question what an LIO is.
The
LIO. Do you understand that your argument is very circular?
No, Your Honor. My argument is consistent with the Foster analysis, which is that the enumerated articles grew out of the general article.
Well, it's consistent with one sentence in Foster, not depends which sentence you pick in Foster. Do you agree with that? If you pick the
May
sentence or the you have to prove the element sentence, your case isn't so hot. But if you pick the sentence on the other page, that's the one you rely on. Is that correct?
Well, I'm also relying on the holding in Foster, which found the appellant guilty on appeal of an Article 134 indecent acts when he was simply charged with an enumerated offense.
Well, then I repeat my question of about 5 minutes ago. where is the limit to this? If there's something lurking in 134 that underlie that's an LIO, that's an unspecified, undefined LIO of every enumerated offense in the code, what limit is there to this? You know, Parker v. Levy spoke in terms of limitations, notice, and so forth. As Judge Ryan just pointed out, there's absolutely no notice here other than this metaphysical notion that it's lurking in the under the enumerated offenses. What limit is this there to this theory?
Your Honor, the limit is found in this Court's jurisprudence, which is has curbed Article 134's scope. And so it cannot be found as a lesser. The conduct that the appellant is being convicted of cannot be sustained on appeal if it did not meet the criteria for a 134 offense. This Court has limited Article 134 under Clauses 1 and 2 in the past. And so as far as applying strict elements tests, it simply does not apply to a flexible statute as Article 134 by necessity is in order to regulate conduct in the military jurisprudence.
What principle is applied then as to limiting the notice with respect to either the preemption doctrine or a notice doctrine in general? That is, what is the accused today on notice of with respect to the lesser included offense in relationship to enumerated offenses?
The accused is on notice of the language in the specification, which said the accused resisted the apprehension of an armed forces police officer. Therefore, the accused, that conduct, independent of the fact of whether or not he was remaining in custody, constitutes a simple disorder under Article 134. Now, the specification does not use 134, but even specifications directly under Article 134 are not required to use language such as service discredit, prejudicial rule, or discipline. That's not required in the manual for court martials. What is required is that the conduct alleged can meet the statute's definition of crime. And here we have a simple disorder that is alleged, not in so many words, but is alleged via the facts alleged in the specification, which is that the appellant in this case resisted arrest of an armed forces police officer.
But I guess the problem that I see with that is that the lower court said he couldn't be found guilty of that. And so if he couldn't be found guilty of that, isn't it a little bit ironic that we take the same conduct that he couldn't be guilty of the charge offense and say, well, even though he wasn't guilty of it, he's guilty of something completely different because he was charged with something that we said he can't be found guilty of?
The appellate court found that he was not guilty of resisting apprehension under Article 95 because the appellant remained in custody. That doesn't change the nature of the appellant's conduct as specified in the specification. It is his resistance under Article 95 that was put in the specification, and this resistance that forms the simple disorder under Article 134. And the facts on appeal were identical as far as sustaining the conviction under Article 134 as opposed to the facts sustaining the conviction under Article 95. Which makes it a very different case from the Riley case that appellant relies on. In Riley, the appellant was charged with premeditated murder. On appeal, the appellate court found a different set of facts, the facts that came after the child was dropped in that case. Failure to provide medical care was constituted a lesser included offense. That's an entirely different set of facts relied upon by the appellate court, an entirely different theory relied upon.
So is it the government's position that any time that the government can prove any of the facts that are in the charge, then the government can obtain a lesser included simple disorder under Article 134?
If those facts are sufficient to sustain a conviction under Article 134.
That's the question. What is the limiting principle in deciding? Say we have a charge under an enumerated article, certain facts. Some of those facts are proved at trial. How does a court decide whether that is sufficient or insufficient to constitute a simple disorder under Article 134?
Under a very similar analysis when comparing two enumerated statutes as to whether one is a lesser included or not. If the facts that are sustained, that are found by the appellate court, are sufficient to meet the Article 134, now we can't go through, unlike comparing enumerated statutes, where you can go through element by element and compare one as a subset of the other. Article 134.
Which we could do in Upham, for example.
Which you can do in Upham, yeah. And Article 134 is, by definition, a more flexible statute. It's a statute that encompasses terms like service discrediting and good order discipline.
So what's the limiting principle by which an appellate court is going to decide whether or not, if some of the elements are proven, something equals prejudicial to good order and discipline or service discrediting behavior?
The limiting principle, again, Your Honor, is this court's jurisprudence and military custom as to what is merely offensive conduct and what is across the line into criminal conduct under Article 134.
So it's a flexible, subjective standard.
Well, I wouldn't say a subjective standard, Your Honor. I'd say it's a flexible standard, which Article 134 is. I see that my time is up.
You may take the time you need to briefly conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Army Court of Criminal Appeals here considered the conduct of appellant in resisting the apprehension of military police officers. This resistance, done in the presence of Korean police officers, was a simple disorder under Article 134, Clauses 1 and 2. The established precedent of this court has found that the principles of Article 134, Clauses 1 and 2 are found within the enumerated articles. Accordingly, the Army Court properly found that Article 134 could be a lesser included offense than Article 95, resisting apprehension. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have a rebuttal?
Yes, sir. Members of the court, our client is not upon notice. This offense was not pled or proven as required by a number of the Supreme Court cases. Also, nobody in the courtroom was on notice. You had the counsel, the military judge, they're all talking about lesser included offenses. During that entire conversation, never did the offense of a simple disorder come up when they were discussing lesser included offenses. It wasn't until this case went to the service court, and the service court looked at the record of trial in retrospect and looked at all the evidence and said, what should the government have charged? What theory should they have proceeded on after everything came out of trial? And what could appellants have been convicted on? They said, you know, simple disorder would have been a great offense to try him on, and they convicted him of that. An appellant should not be convicted, tried and convicted for the first time on appeal. Subject to your questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. The case is now submitted. Before we adjourn, I'd simply want to note for the record that the court's judicial conference and continuing legal education program will take place next week, March 4th and 5th at Catholic University. Information about the program is available in the foyer and on the court's website. And with that, the court will be adjourned.